and welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh.
And I'm Will Alexander.
You are indeed young William, and the world is a better place.
Young William. I love it when you call me young William.
Anyway, this week's show, we're going to talk about statistics, some good things that have come out of New York. I'm really pleased with the direction, a little more transparency. We've got a good board going on. We're going to talk about selects, those extra titles, extra championships, grands, and all that good stuff. Limited registration, what it has done to our big picture of our sport, and resets. Time to look at your breed and go, maybe that plain dog is the one we need. All that and more right here on the Dog Show Drive. We're bright and early this. Well, I don't know about bright, but we're early this morning.
Oh, it's bright, Wayne. The sun is coming through the window here. Yes, good morning. It's good to see you as always.
It is. We've had a particularly good early rise this morning because we both have so much to do because we're very important men.
Yeah.
I've got to go clean out the RV and you got to bathe the dog or something.
Right? Bathe the dog and get ready to roll.
Very important agenda. Anyway, we've had, it was a great weekend last weekend. Young William, you were down in my old neighborhood in New Jersey.
Yes, Edison, New Jersey. I was there for 4 days and the Big Apple Sporting Specialty, and we had all, okay, it was a great show. And Long Island Club had especially, there was, I think, 3 setter specialties for all varieties or all breeds, not varieties. And that was a great contingency of setter people. It was almost like being at the combined specialties again. It was great.
That's great. And 2,500 entries of the raw breeds. This is a good sign. Yeah. A good sign. Good judges and a well-run club. Well-run clubs.
Clubs, yeah.
And a good location. This is what happens. I have not been to that new facility. Well, new to me. I guess it's been around a while. How is that?
Oh, it's beautiful. Easy to work, spacious, good rings, lots of grooming area. It was an excellent setup for the dog show. I just said, I'm sorry. But it was easy to work, really easy to work, easy to unload in. I got all the handlers had no issues getting the dogs in there. It's a nice facility.
From what I understand, I don't know how you managed it, but you had one of the greatest assistant handlers of all time.
I did.
Set up next to you.
It saved a spot for him. And then we had young Brody Cavanaugh right next to us. And you know what he did to me every morning? Because I am now an owner handler, Wayne. So I show up at 7 o'clock. And I think because of our podcast and the stories, he'd say, "You ever miss a dog show entirely?" I told him, "You are no longer allowed to listen to the podcast."
That's beautiful. Yes, he listens to it. And that is so funny because we talked about that. In fact, he said to me, "What time do I have to get there?" I said, "Well, we know Will gets there pretty early." And he said, "Yeah, did you ever miss a dog show?" So he remembered it. And it was pretty funny. So he had his dog there, and Margaret was there as well. Yep. And boy, it sure worked out. He finished his young bitch with a Best of Winners win and an Award of Merit at the Pointer Club Supported Entry under Dennis Jansen, who you've interviewed.
Yeah, Dennis.
I've not seen her in.
Oh, she's wonderful. And she told me this weekend she's considering retiring, and she is so with it. And so I love watching Dennis judge.
She's great. Yeah. I haven't spoken to her in 25 years, probably. Oh. But I know that if I saw her, we wouldn't have missed a beat because we think alike. And
she's a wonderful lady and just a wonderful dog judge. I love watching her run a ring, and she's
indeed. Well,
sport's going to miss her.
Brody has 6 months experience showing dogs now. He's really packing the. So it's incredible how much he's learned from you, Adam, everybody. There's not a handler or an exhibitor in the country that hasn't reached out and helped. And we really appreciate that. It gives me hope that it's not just him. When young people come in the sport, this new group of exhibitors and breeders and handlers seems to be more likely to reach out and help each other. So
we had a young lead. Jill and I were there with Jill. We had Jill Taylor, the breeder of the LAR Setters. Jennifer McClintock was there to help us, my very first assistant. And Mia, a friend of ours with English Setters, she was there helping us. But we still was really busy. There was this young lady. I don't know how old she is. She has flat coats. I cannot think of her last name. Her first name is Bryn. Just a wonderful young lady. Maybe, I don't know, 14 or 15. I don't know for sure. She asked if she could help with the Irish Setters. And she was great. And it's not like she's not in the ring all the time. I looked and she was winning flat coats every day or almost every day. I saw her in the group. She wanted to learn about Irish Setters. I love that. I love when they reach out like that.
I do too. Brody's a sponge. He just wants to learn everything and watch. He's a good observer. I mean, that's what he does for a living, right? He's board certified in observing people. So he does watch and pick up, but he was very excited.
I freelance at the airports, you know.
Can you imagine how excited it must be for someone to come into the sport at that late of a stage of the game and finish his first dog.
But you know, when I watched him 2 days, and he fits right in. He's a big guy, and guys sometimes don't run with dogs. He runs with his dog. He's not towing it. He's not short striding himself. He's not, it just seems like a natural thing for him. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think being an athlete all of his life probably helped contribute to that. You know, goalies have got to be pretty darn athletic and know about speed and pacing. But it was, you know, when you complete your first championship, when your dog does, I'm trying to reach back to that moment. I remember it. It was under Billy Kendrick at the Philadelphia Kennel Club Dog Show. It was an English Setter that I did myself. I mean, I finished my first Beagle when I was, I don't know, 8. But it wasn't just me.
Yeah.
So this was something. And when I remember my first one was an English Setter under Billy Kendrick. And I won't forget that moment. I won't forget anything about that day. It's got to be exciting. And I think we get soured sometimes. And the only thing I do tell them is this isn't typical, you know. It doesn't come along where you go flying through with 3 majors under really highly respected judges at big pointer entries. Your second one. I remember George Austin was shown an Irish Setter. I think it was George, and a famous one. And he retired it, and he was showing a class dog the next day who wasn't half that good. But somehow the dog got confused, and he ended up going best in show. And the owner wanted to know if he got any points for that, and if that was a good thing as a novice owner. And then you try to tell a guy, that'll never happen again. I might not even finish this one, but so we get spoiled with our victories. And when you have that many shows, there's plenty of times to get spoiled when you get to that level of best in show. One of the things that crossed my mind, because she's only, I don't know, 14 months old or something. What do you do now, right? Well, we have things now. The AKC has events that you can participate in. That was not the case when we were growing up. Well, he can go for his junior hunter. He can do agility, obedience. He can do anything with her. And also, he can just go to local shows.
Yeah, and just keep her feet wet because she's just a baby.
Yeah. So, and that's true. And we're not talking about just Brody. We're talking about anybody who finishes something quickly and young. Then what do? You put her home for 2 years? You know, that's not always going to work out in their favor. He's got her showing great. You don't want to give up on that. So sometimes you'll see dogs in the ring enter the specials. And you'll say to yourself as a judge, my, I wonder why they're in here. You know, do you really think you're going to beat the number one sporting dog in the world who's all pulled together and mature? They don't care about that much anymore because they can go for these new titles. And I know they sound bogus. And But I did invent, well, I didn't invent them, but I introduced them at another registry and it was very successful, the grand champion thing. So when the AKC started doing it too, there was a lot of course, the launch wasn't sweet, the select and all that, because they didn't know how many they're going to have. They didn't have how many ribbons to make, and they put the superintendents in a bind for a while. But that's been sorted, I believe. And now you get a ribbon with the date on it and all that. And people do offer, do enter over and over again. Even though they're not going to win the breed, they want to get those points.
And then they become just like when you're finishing dog. I just got another major day on my dog. It's a major select. It's become, and let's face it, sometimes you walk in that ring, Wayne, and there's 10 or 15 specials, and half of them deserve something.
Yes.
So this it's a good thing.
It is a good thing. And if it keeps dogs in the ring, that keeps entries going. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, the clubs benefit by it. And more important, the exhibitor does.
I definitely think the exhibitors do.
If you finish your dog early and then you have a couple of years to wait, if it's specials material, it might not be, you may get on golf or something. You know, you may take off into another sport. If you can at least show them once in a while, every month or so at a local show, just to keep your feet wet and keep yourself in it, you might want that next dog and you might, you know, get hooked on the sport. And so those programs do a lot of good. It's a pain for judges to have to remember the selects and this and that and the owner handler and who's that will come back in, but that keeps him going. And he can do the owner handler thing now too.
And the thing about a young dog with the potential of a special, if you don't keep them somewhat tuned up, a dog might not be a special.
That's true.
Like they learn not to enjoy it as much. They'd rather go hunting or stay on the couch and watch Jeopardy. They may just enjoy those things over showing dogs. Whenever I had a young dog that I would come to me and I thought, oh, when this dog grows up, I really want to. I always made them come at least once a month, even if I just took them and showed them once a month, just so that if I couldn't show him, I always told my assistant, don't try to win. I just want this dog to have a blast out there so that he becomes one of those dogs that you catches your eye because, let's face it, a happy show dog catches your eye.
Yeah. It's important to stay in the game, and I think these programs have done that. I know they're a pain. I know that we don't get out of there till 8 o'clock anymore because you have two sets of groups, sometimes three. And then you get the puppy groups and the miscellaneous groups and the open and the FSS and whatever else they can throw in there. But it does give the clubs entry money to keep moving. And it does keep people in the sport, we hope. We've talked about data before, especially the last week or two, and I've just written about it. And I sent in two articles. And the next day, I was able to just by sheer luck, or not, because I would have changed the articles because I have new data. There is new data being subtly given out to certain people. It's nothing like the old data. They don't break it down. They don't put it in the annual report. They don't disseminate it. But for the first time in many years, maybe 20, the delegates for the parent clubs received some reasonable data, not just for their breed, which they were getting, which is silly, but for all breeds. First time.
Wow, that's incredible.
And
someone's listening.
I was able to get a look at it. There's nothing saying to the delegates you can't. It did say to the delegates, feel free to share it with your club. I understand that that means you can't be printing articles about it and putting it on the internet, or guess, or whatever.
Even under people's windshield wipers.
Right. But
sorry, it's early.
But, you know, when they tell their club members, the club members are going to talk, right? So it's not guarded data, but it's certainly not widely disseminated. And that's too bad, but at least it's a step in the right direction. When I read the data, I see a bigger story than probably what most people would see when they read it, because I've been interested in this in so long and I have 40 years worth of data in my head and some on paper.
And because I'm a dog show nerd. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, unfortunately, that's really the truth, right? A number of dog show nerd. Sad.
We all are to a degree. There's no question. Sorry. Sorry, I get you off topic, Wayne.
I need some higher level hobbies. The good news is entries are up. The interesting news is that I've been trying to get this data since it went away 20 years ago. Number of unique dogs competing has gone down, and not a little. And it's a trend line over time. So we have this rising line of entries per year and this declining line of unique dogs. And by unique dogs, I mean, you know, if there's 1,000 entries and one dog is entered 1,000 times, you know, that's different than 1,200 dogs being shown. So it's fewer dogs competing in the sport. Also, it's a little tilted because in confirmation, they've included miscellaneous, FSS, open, every sort of confirmation entry. So it's not just your typical all breed entry, but that's a small section. So I don't think it skews the data too much. Why do you think, Will, there'd be more entries and fewer dogs entered?
Some dogs are getting entered in a lot of dog shows, Wayne.
They are. I don't know. We just alluded to the fact that people are coming out more for selects and owner-handler wins so they can get their grand points. That could be part of it.
Yeah.
Because they're entering more often. But that doesn't matter. What matters is how many individual dogs are participating in the sport. They're entering more often is good news for the superintendents. It's good news for the clubs for sure. And it's good news for the sport in general. But why are fewer dogs being shown? My guess, and I'm going to need to do a lot more research on this, but it just seems obvious, Will. It seems obvious that while they're registering more, the other line was registrations, and registrations are up. They've been up every year for the last 10 years, a good big chunk during the COVID blip, and that helped. Were those dogs during COVID and the dogs being purchased over the last 5 years, are they coming more from breeders or are they coming from Petland?
Yeah, we know for a fact we don't have any big breeders anymore. Very few anyway. So I'm thinking the latter, Wayne.
I think so too. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that because purebred dogs are getting into the hands of people. But when you see French's is number one, and you see all the posts and ads about lilacs and merles, that is not coming from show breeders.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that we cause this by ourselves. The limited registration rule killed the sport, and it killed AKC numbers.
Oh. I know we talked about it earlier, and just to think, just throwing it out there, to think that if that had been in effect during the early 70s when Mr. Eldridge was the Irish Setter person to go to, can you imagine? We wouldn't have Meadowlark, we wouldn't have Scarley, we wouldn't have all those Irish Setter kennels that were stamped. We wouldn't have them.
And those kennels produce dogs without limited registration too. When the commercial breeders, they're not using limited registration. They're selling these dogs on full papers with no spay neuter contracts. I have no problem with that, but it's an unfair advantage because we thought limited registration, the reasoning for it was because we're afraid of backyard breeders. And limited registration was supposed to stop backyard breeders. Guess what? It didn't. It never did.
No.
Supply and demand.
It just went to a different source.
It did, Will. The supply and demand tilted. So people still wanted purebred dogs, but they couldn't get them because we spayed and neutered everything, think we're doing the right thing. So now they get them from Petland. in whatever other pet shops are out there with UKC, with AKC papers. And then those dogs do go out and end up being bred from. So we've taken the responsibly bred dogs and spayed or neutered them. We've taken the not so responsible bred dogs, kept them intact so people can keep producing them. So registrations are going up. That's a really good, that's great news. But when confirmation entries of unique dogs, so the total number of dogs actually being shown at dog shows, when that's declining and registrations are up, you have to draw the conclusion that they're coming more from commercial breeding operations. And there's a reason that AKC put so much money and time into nurturing these commercial breeders, because that's where the registrations are coming from. We sterilize all ours.
Yeah.
Ugh. Tough pill to swallow. And I know
it that really is. When you put it out there like that, it's, you think about what the direction we're going in.
Well, the good news is, from what I hear from people I respect that are going into these commercial breeding operations, they tell me that some of the nicest kennels you've ever seen in your life. Yes, there are still the chicken coops in the
back. Right, yeah.
But the people that want to make money, and that's all commercial breeders do, they've realized that you can make more money breeding healthy dogs and keeping them in better condition. I heard a veterinarian who went to do health checks, who was paid by the commercial breeder to come do it, tell me it was the most beautiful kennel he's ever been in.
Well, that's a good thing. That's good news.
Great news. And that they had kids just socializing these puppies, just walking them, just taking them to the play yards. They did everything to socialize these puppies and to get them healthy enough. The old days of the Hunt Corporation, which was a disaster, crap puppy mill dumps. They were producing puppies, bringing them to Hunt, and Hunt was giving them a bath, a cursory vet check, blow drying them, put them in a shipping truck, and send them off to pet stores. That was not a sustainable solution because they got sick and they died on the way there, and they were a mess and kept coming back and returned. So at least the commercial breeding operations have been cleaned up, at least the good ones. Mm-hmm. But still, is that where we want all our breeding population to come from? Or do we want it coming from responsible breeders, show breeders, who have done the health testing?
Who and know their family of dogs. It's important to know your family of dogs. You know what to look for. You know what you're getting when you bought a Trevelled Irish Setter. You knew what you were getting.
And you could also call Ted.
Yeah.
Think about that. When you get a commercially bred dog intact, you're going to breed it. You don't know a thing about it, nor can you call and say, hey, you know what? In this particular breeding, in this particular line, have you gotten any dogs that have XYZ? Or do all your dogs eat rocks? Yeah. There are lines of dogs that eat rocks, by the way. We know that. You can't get that information. You can't call and say, did his mother always sit funny or whatever it might be? That connection's lost. Yet that's where cottage bred, kitchen bred litters by novices is not a bad thing. When my dad sold pet puppies locally, they'd call. There was no such thing as spaying and neutering and all that in the 50s and 60s. They'd call him and say, my brother's electrician's got a beagle and we want to plug him in. My dad would say, the world needs good, well-bred pets. I sold you a red, well-bred, healthy dog. I'll help you. And that's where pets came from. That's where pets came from. We've taken that market away, which was a boon for the golden doodle breeders.
Yeah.
You can get them anywhere. You can't get standard poodles everywhere. You can't even get goldens everywhere, yeah. Not from responsible showbred people. No, it's a direction trend. I'm not saying it's a complaint. I'm saying without
it's the wrong trajectory, though. I really think it is. We're losing that, like you said, about calling Ted. That information you would get from that breeder is education you will never get from anywhere else. You can't get it anywhere else. We're losing that relationship between the breeders.
You didn't buy that puppy from the commercial breeding operation, which might be a very responsible place. You bought it from Petland. That's where you get your answers.
Yeah.
Some kid.
Maybe they have a brochure.
Yeah. From some kid who was working selling socks in the department store next door and got be like puppies better and took a job there. I don't know how much information you're going to get.
I think it's great that they're healthier now and they're raised in a better manner and they're socialized. But I cannot tell you how important it was for us to be able to call Bob Gillum or Ginny Price or someone that to help us in the right direction with our dogs. Invaluable.
And it really speaks poorly of how this data is being interpreted. The commercial breeding operations, the good ones, what percentage are they? How many are still being, is the Walmart parking lot 50% of registrations? You know, where you find them on the internet and then the woman says, I'll meet you in the Walmart parking lot. I don't know. Well, how many come from, are they grading these commercial operations? Are they watching the good ones to see how many they produce so we know where purebred dogs are coming from? I know where they're not coming from, and you do too. All of our listeners will tell you that the people they got their dogs from 40 years ago bred a whole lot more puppies and sold them intact than they do. And we think we're being high and mighty, and we think we're being the only responsible people because we don't want dogs sold to pet people who turn around breeding them. They're doing it anyway, but they're getting inferior stock to do it with. Why wouldn't we give them the good ones?
No, it's been an issue for ages since it came in limited. You know, you can't. I have this section I think I've told you about in my seminar called Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. And I have a section where I talk about with one swipe of your pen in your checkbook, you have gained 50 years experience from them and 50 years from the previous. And you're getting all that. Now you don't. Now you're getting, here's your change. Thank you. Come again.
We go to the dog. We go to our local. We walk our dogs to the park. Well, our dog now at the park. Actually, she went three times yesterday, the poor little Hazel. We ran her legs off. This is a little beagle. While we're there, we meet people with purebred dogs. We meet a lot of golden doodle people, of course. We created that void. We created the golden doodle market by spaying and neutering the purebred dogs. If they could get goldens and poodles and that never fell off, I wouldn't be surprised if they wouldn't be less popular than they are now. Be that as it may, whenever I meet a purebred dog owner, and I meet them all the time, I always ask them where they got the dog. Never has anyone said from a show breeder. Never. This doesn't happen. Actually, there was a Springer that was particularly good looking, and I asked, and I did know the breeder. But that's over, 10 years of walking dogs to the park. You never get, you just don't see it. You don't see it.
And you used to always see it. You'd go and walk your dog and you'd see a Springer. Oh, yeah, I got that from this woman in Michigan. And they'd explain it. You'd go, yeah.
We used to be, we'd see Irish Setters at the park, Will. When's the last time you saw an Irish Setter walking down the street?
No.
Yeah, it's too bad. There are more Cane Corsos registered, a lot more than there were Irish Setters.
Yeah.
You could, if every delegate parent club member got this data and mailed it to one person and they could compile it, you could finally see the top 200 breeds ranked, not just by rank, but by number. We don't know if number 18, 19, 20, 20, we don't know if number 18 through 75 have one more dog than each other. We don't know that. So yeah, that still is data I hope forthcoming. There's two things that come to mind. This board is a really good, the AKC board I'm talking about,
yeah,
is really got some smart, forward-thinking people. And I think we're going to see more of these things where data is starting to come back out. We're seeing it already. They gave us for the first time in the annual report the total numbers of dogs registered, the total number of entries. That was in the annual report. And now they're giving at least the parent club people some data on overall registrations. Not by breed, and it's not much. It's very lumpy. This is how many dogs, period. Not by breed, not by event type. Well, there is by event category, but not event type. So I think this board's starting to turn the corner and say to the staff, hey, we need this stuff. We need this stuff.
And it's interesting to think about. I know I don't want to, take any credit, but maybe more than just my mom is listening.
It's come to my attention that may be true.
Yeah. Well, I know my mom's listening. Hi, Mom. But maybe there's other people out there.
I think there's maybe a couple in New York.
She'd be saying, sit up straight, William. Sorry.
I don't know. They may be crunching all this data internally and finding these trends and knowing it. Are they doing something about it? I don't know. It took them 20 years to clean up the commercial market. And I'm not saying it's all cleaned up.
No, but it's definitely in the right direction. Yeah, but those kennels, like you said, if they're state of the art and they're looked after the dogs, that's a plus. Mm-hmm. Because we had horror stories.
Our slogan when I worked there was meet the mother. We were subtly saying never buy from a pet shop. We're saying only buy from a breeder where you could meet the parents, at least the mother of the puppy you're buying. Well, that slogan's changed dramatically. No one's saying that anymore.
That's a great slogan, though. And you think about it. I hate going back to Ted, but I remember when we bought an Irish Setter from Ted, it was a day. You made a day because they invited you in. You saw all the family. You saw the puppies. I remember him putting the puppies down and him patting me on the head and said, which one do you want?
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's not the way it works anymore. And that's too bad. I hope that we can find, by the way, so now we owe a debt of gratitude to the commercial breeders, because without the money from that registration to the registrations from Petland, we don't have a sport. They couldn't afford the field staff. They couldn't afford the equipment. They couldn't afford the office staff without these commercial breeders breeding these dogs, these lilac French bulldogs or whatever they're breeding.
Oh, Lord. That's a big thing to wrap your head around when you think about it.
It's a big change of business model. Yep. There's a way to fix it. And that's get rid of this stupid limited registration. Now, I'm not saying some dogs, maybe if they're deformed or something, maybe you put a limited registration on that. But every pet you sell, by the way, have you ever known anybody, Will, that bought a dog as a pet that turned out to be a good one?
Oh, when I was actively showing dogs and I was also grooming dogs, I'd take some dogs on the day off and in the kennel, I'd be like, where'd you get this dog? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Springer lady in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And spayed and neutered, just like she required me to do. I did my beautifully job. You know who spays and neuters dogs? Responsible breeders. You know who doesn't? Irresponsible breeders. So we've given ourselves a rule that only we will take. And by the way, we don't really need to spay and neuter ours. We know how to use leashes and fencing.
Right.
We're the last ones that needed to spay and neuter our dogs. Other countries think it's hysterical we spay and neuter. Even the real animal rights country, some of the areas in the UK can be quite animal rights oriented. And they don't even spay and neuter over there because they don't understand the need to. You've got a leash, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just think there needs to be some sort of study with dog people and show people, especially. And I'm not saying change the model back. I don't know how you can. I'm going to get hate mail from limited registration fans saying, you don't understand, this is taking the dogs out of the backyard breeding. No, it's not. It's taking your dogs out of the backyard breeding, but it hasn't taken your breed out of the backyard breeding.
Yeah, and there lies the issue.
And if you really have those people to your house, if you've really vetted them properly, if you really have taken the time, if you say to yourself, I wonder if I should sell them a puppy, you shouldn't, right off the bat, if you have any question. So you're already vetting these people to be good pet owners. And if you're a good breeder, you're going to let them call you and you're going to call them and check on them. And you're going to get pictures of these dogs on the couch with the kids. That's not the enemy. That's not the enemy. If they want to breed a litter of pets, you should encourage it. You've given them a healthy, health-tested, purebred dog with a good temperament.
That's amazing. You talked about the question. I used to use that with whenever Adam or whoever would ask me that question. I said, if you're asking that question, you already know the answer.
Well, I think that we need to step back and look at the big picture. You can't do it without data. And congratulations to the new board. From what I understand, they work together really well. There's no cliques. There's no infighting.
Okay.
It's a good cooperative group. And I think, you know, people just don't understand. People showing dogs don't know anybody. They don't know there even is a board. And they don't know what the board does or how they get elected or how they exist. This is very simple. The AKC parent clubs, all breed and parent club, you know, the delegates is what they're called. Each club, not each, but most clubs have a delegate. They vote on who gets elected to the board. The board of directors oversees all of this. The staff does the daily operations, but as far as policy changes, rules, and overall approaches, it's the board of directors, not the officers of the American Kennel Club.
Yeah.
They carry out the board's directions and duties. And they're very important. These are all dog people now. They're good dog people. They're approachable dog people. Talk to them at dog shows. They want to hear from what you're, they want to hear from their constituency. They're sort of like state representatives. They want to hear your input so they can consider both sides of issues and bring them forth and present them and tell the staff to implement them. They're very important in this sport, and we don't even know who they are. I'll bet you, well, I said this before, I bet no one can name two of them, never mind 12. And do they even know there are 12, that there are 12, or know what they do? They get elected by the delegates, by your club's delegate. Have you told your delegate who you think should be a good board member that you should vote, they should vote for? You probably have no idea who's running for the board. So when you're looking at the big picture, sometimes you got to put down the judging program and the entry form for a minute and look at the bigger picture, or you won't have any titles to win.
That's true. Wow.
Anyway, that's my concern of the week. More important, what about, we were talking earlier, Will, about the reset button, as you call it. And I love your term.
Yeah, that's important. And you see it happening. And you know when you walk up to a ring, Wayne, and you look throughout the ring at the dogs, and they're lovely dogs. They're love, but it's not what you remember. You know, mm-hmm. And sometimes certain breeds just need a reset button. Like we had a stud dog. And we called him the repair shop because you could take anything, not anything, but an overdone bitch or a fancy bitch, and you wanted to reset that, you would breed him to this dog, breed her to this dog, and that dog was almost like our reset button. And it, there's a lot of breeds out there that I think need to press that button. I don't know.
I couldn't agree anymore. We have, I guess because of the focus on the group win rather than the breed ring win, it's called incrementalism in science, and it's yeah. So subtle you can see it happening. Irish setters didn't get straight in front overdone behind overnight. You know, it took time. And then it gets to a point, and that's just true. I'm not just picking on Irish setters.
No, it's one that's noticeable, right?
If you want them to be a little elegant, then you want them to be more elegant, and then more, and then they turn into cartoons of themselves, or fancy spiders, or whatever it is, And that's true not just for gun dogs. It's true for all breeds. Those extra fancy, extra exaggerated, extra curvy, extra attractive dogs that catch your eye, that can win groups and best in shows. You need that reset button. You need that honest. Remember we used to talk about honest dogs?
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting. I interviewed Christian Menopoulos a few weeks ago. And he had an interesting take on this. He said, it's amazing how some of the eye-catching details of certain dogs are what is wrong with that dog.
Wow. Good point.
Right? Isn't that a good point?
Yeah. That's an excellent point. That's true. Some of the things that you make, you know, oh, look at that beautiful long neck. Well, have you read the standard?
Right.
It says moderate. The word moderate occurs in every standard. Moderate, balanced. There's a couple of words that keep popping up. The interpretation of that changes over the years to slightly exaggerated, more exaggerated, extremely exaggerated. And then there's that dog that comes in the ring and it might not be as fancy as the others, but it might be structurally sound, might have enough bone, enough coat, enough texture. It can come and go without looking like you need to call a stretcher. It can go around the ring and balance. Maybe it's not the fastest flying at the end of the lead, head up in the air dog, but maybe it's a good, honest dog. And people will say now, and I've heard it, there are a couple of dogs I can think of in certain breeds right now that I think are good, honest dogs that don't win enough, in my opinion. And people will say, well, they're plain.
Oh, isn't that a horrible term? I was a breed I watched this weekend in Edison, and it was a good, strong breed. And I'll tell you, there was a dog that had no fanfare. He wasn't handled by any prominent, but it was the owner handler. You could just tell. And I asked somebody about the person, and they said they keep coming every show with these dogs. And this was a beautiful dog, and you just know if you saw that dog soaking wet, everything would just fit and flow, and there was nothing. I don't know about you, Wayne, but when I see dogs like that, I get a little goosebumpy. I really do. Even when I was a younger handler, and I remember putting dogs on the table, and I'd have them soaking wet and look at them, because I had mirrors everywhere. I would look at them and I'd be like, oh my God, this is so right. And then 9 times out of 10, you couldn't get anywhere with it. Yeah. You know, they're out there, and people are finding them. This dog was found one of the days, and I was like, pardon me?
One.
I know, but that's something. It was probably something for this person, because this person walked into a highly competitive breed every weekend, and hats off that they keep producing a dog of this quality, and they're not getting the fanfare they deserve, but they're sticking to their guns. And I'm telling you, this dog could fit anywhere, you know.
I had Westminster sends out, and this is a great practice, and they've done it, and this is great for purebred dogs. All the judges for Westminster, wherever they live, Westminster sends out a press packet to the local media, and then they come and interview you.
Yeah. Well,
and you get to talk about purebred
dogs. Local man judging Westminster Dog Show.
Right.
News at 11.
You get to talk to usually a tertiary market or secondary market that are looking for news, and they'll come and do a story. And they did that yesterday. Actually, it's pretty funny. I forgot all about it. And I was on my way to Costco, and Cheryl called.
Which
and
said, is a great thing to do.
There's a news crew with cameras and videos and reporters. So I drove like James Bond to get home to get here in time. And by then, the guys had went and gotten a beer somewhere, so I had to wait a couple minutes before they came back. But I was able to, when they interview you, and it's a local media, so I think you're more willing to take some chances maybe and speak your mind. They asked me what I thought about when I was in the ring, and they asked it a few different ways. And I find myself saying, this is an exact quote. I don't care if they hop and jump on the down and back. I don't care if they stand still the longest. I certainly don't care if they nail the free stack, and I definitely don't care about their haircut, because none of those things are hereditary. I'm looking for a functional dog. I'm doing gun dogs, and I'm looking for a dog that can go out and do their job. I'm looking for a dog that, if I'm starving, I've got a single barrel shotgun and one shell, which one's coming with me? And Marilyn Monroe once said, "I didn't know I knew that until I said it." And afterwards I thought, well, I guess that's pretty much it. You know? And then they asked me about how hard it was, because you know everybody. And I used our discussion over the last year about our job is to be selfish. I don't care. I'm not pleasing anybody today except me. Yep. That's it.
And that is such an important lesson. Was that Tom Horner, right?
Horner, yeah.
That is so important. And I'm so glad we got onto that, because I use that. I haven't judged a lot yet, Wayne, but I use that every time I judge. I'm sorry. I love you guys, but I'm being selfish.
Yeah. And you do judge a lot, Will, in your head, at ringside, while you're in the ring, outside the ring. We're all judging all the time. Yes. Just because you have a badge on, you're in the middle of the ring, doesn't change your thought process. And you can't just sit there outside the ring and go, well, you know, that one really looked is better conditioned and better groomed. This one's well-groomed and well, you can see it. Yeah. They did have the respect to try, but maybe they're not an artist.
Like my friend Jill said, that's icing on the cake. If the cake's not very good to begin with, it's just icing. But if it's a good cake with good icing, Bob's wrong.
A house with a gorgeous exterior done by a decorator who knows every angle and every color and every corbel that looks beautiful on the outside, but is falling apart on the inside because the guys didn't know how to frame it.
Right.
Do you want that, or do you want a really good foundation and a really good solid framing job before you put the icing on the house and the siding, the windows?
I had this conversation with one of my assistants one time, and they brought me a dog, and they're very talented. And they did this. I said, what about this? Well, I can fix that. What about this? I can fix that. I said, you're very good, but why not start with a good canvas, then make a piece of art? You know, it's like, rather than having to fix things.
Yeah, it's true. I think I hear judges more talking about these things. I don't know how easy it is to apply it because of all the external pressures. And your human nature is to want to do what your friends did and other judges did that you respect. The bandwagon marketing works better than any. There was a great energy study in California you probably read about, Will, in Science Journal.
Well, I was doing that yesterday. Yeah. And my Tuesday is set aside for that.
I figured you did.
Yeah, that and Jeopardy, you know.
They go to, this is a water issue in California, in this community, and a shortage of it. And they go to all the houses and say, we'll take $10 off your bill if you reduce your water usage. Then they try, and they check, and nobody did anything. Then they try saying, you're going to be helping the environment and helping the general community if you lower your water bill, lower your usage. Didn't happen. They tried several of these things. The one thing that worked, and it worked really big, is they send you a letter saying, your neighbor reduced his water usage by 10%. The guy across the street reduced it by 14%, and the guy behind you reduced it by 6%. That's it. That whole bandwagon kind of I want to fit in thing, I want to be part of the cool group, worked. And everybody reduced their water usage because they thought the other guy was reducing theirs. It happens in our mental process of judging dog shows. If everybody around you is reducing exaggerations by 10%, maybe you will too. If they're all rewarding exaggeration by 10%, you probably will too. I'm not saying it's conscious. It's just human nature.
Yeah, you got to also look at the other side. If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, chances are it's a duck. So you got to put things in perspective. And just because it's winning a lot doesn't mean it's not a good dog, because it probably is.
Absolutely. And that's where you get these people that like to knock off the good ones just so that
I call them the ones that are stuck on the Discovery Channel. Just can't seem to change that channel. Come on.
I use it all the time. I use that. There was a judge a couple of weeks ago that I love and respect and adore, but boy, oh boy, that's the only channel she had on her TV.
But did you see the gum pigment?
Yes, exactly. And that's my stage three judging thing, you know, where you get hung up on the stage one is, this is really condensed version, is you know what a good looking thing is. And then you say, it's a pretty dog. This, the middle one is where you get so hung up on the nuances of type. The only one that matters is the whole dog one, the third stage. But we all get hung up in the second, and we want to prove how much we know. Did you see the ear veins and the leather of that pointer?
Oh, I haven't seen that for 20 years. I had to reward it.
I could barely see it because its front was slapping itself in the chin.
Yep.
But there you go.
Change the channel. Get off there.
Indeed. Where are you going next, bud? What you got going on?
I'm going to my grooming room. I have to get a dog ready for us. I'm going to Syracuse this weekend. There's more setter specialties there, so we're going there. Great. We're taking Jill and I are taking a bunch of dogs from the kennel and showing some Irish setters. And Jenny's coming with us again. Jenny McClintock, my very first assistant. I don't think old assistant, like something. Oh, she's 90. She's my assistant. My very first assistant, Jenny. So it's going to be great. And I'm going to bring the beagle along as well.
Good. That'll be fun. That'll be a fun time.
Yeah.
It's got to be less stressful just having your own dogs.
That you Oh, win. My God. I have so much fun.
You're like an owner handler. It feels that good. When you win with your own dog, it feels better for sure.
And when you lose, no.
You take it personally, don't you?
No, yeah. Well, because when you're a handler and you lost it, you can just move on. Oh, well, I've got to go to the Bouvier now. When you're like a setter, you get to sit and stew for a while.
That's true.
Oh, well. Now, what's up for you next? Where are you?
Pointer National.
Oh, okay.
We've rented a house down there. I think I've mentioned we're all going. It's 5 days of shows. I don't do 5 days of shows. So we'll do some sightseeing in between. But, you know, when the judging program's out, young William, I've got to get my spreadsheets going and find out if any of the breeds that I'm interested in applying for have someone who happens to have 12 years, not 10 or 11, 12 years judging the breed.
12 years, 3 months, 2 weeks.
That's right. And then I've got to see if there's a major in that breed and if it doesn't conflict with something else that I need to be. And it can't exceed more than 2 hours, because if you're in the ring with a judge for 2 hours and 15 minutes, it screws up everything, evidently, Will. You can't go beyond 2 hours.
Oh.
And something about number of judges on the day that you can use, and you can't use them twice. So it becomes, you'll go through a 5,000 dog show and find there's two people that qualify. You can observe. I'll find something to do, but I'm looking forward to seeing 100 pointers.
Oh yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah. And mostly because, you know, I'm still interested in all the pedigrees and all the bloodlines, and I'd like to see, even though I'm not breeding them anymore, I love to see the trends and what people are breeding. Oh,
for sure. The direction people are going, you know, again, it's a family thing. I love watching families of dogs and what direction they go in. So.
I'll tell you what's going to bother me right off the bat. People are breeding for specific colors. We've got a breed that has trouble with fronts, neck, and shoulders, and a bunch of other things we've needed to correct for 40 years. And instead we're selecting for certain colors or patterns of colors. And that always bothers me. All that and more right here. On the Dog Show Drive.
The Dog Show Drive. All right. I think I've taken up enough of your time, Wainer.
Loved every second of it, bud.
Oh, I appreciate me as well. I enjoy our talks each week. It gets things rolling. All right, everybody. We'll see you down the road. Stay safe out there.
Party on, Greg.
No way.
Way.
Better be paying attention, Doc.
Thanks for the
answer. So, Ernie, you use this in the blooper reel.
That's right.
We love you, Ernie. What you doing?
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quick,
taking yourself so damn seriously.
I'm falling apart.
Thanks, sir.
We didn't mention hockey either.
Isn't that unbelievable?
We've had it, Doc.
Yeah, they want to see it in a blueprint. This is good. We're going to be here in a second, Wiener.